conflict. So look to your neighbor and give him a little punch in the arm. There you go. Let's start a little conflict up in this place so we have something to deal with. You know, conflict is so normal in relationships. In fact, if any of you are in management positions where you deal with people, you have people on your team, it's a question that I like to ask people as they begin to describe to me what they do professionally. I like to ask, well, how many people do you manage? Did you manage anybody? How many people do you manage? We have lots of managers, lots of team leaders in here. And all of you that deal with people know this. You spend the majority of your time helping people on your team to deal with conflict, to resolve conflict. There, conflict happens when people get together. And the thing about family is the people that have gotten together are stuck together, usually. And so there is going to be conflict in our families. And rather than avoiding it, ignoring it, stuffing it, running away from it, what we want to do is think biblically about conflict. And you think, well, I haven't had any conflict in my family recently. 82 days until Christmas. The holidays is a time where many families experience more conflict than other times of the year. Do you know that to be true? That is true. Well, what causes conflict? Just normal life things, being in relationship. And oftentimes, what causes conflict, as we begin to set the stage here for what the Bible says, what causes conflict are small things. I thought it was interesting. I did a little research reading Sigmund Freud. Noted that people, you know, Sigmund Freud, I don't really, I'm just trying to impress you. But he did say this. He said, as he's observed, he's a psychologist, he observed people, that people who live near one another and are the most similar are oftentimes the ones that have the most intense conflict. And he was noting this regarding people groups, the Spaniards, the Portuguese, North Germans and South Germans, the English and the Scotch. They were often in history the ones who fought the most bitterly, but they frankly lived near one another and they were the most similar. And it's an interesting thing to note. In fact, what Freud discovered regarding this reality that people who are similar have very small difference between one another, oftentimes fight the most, is still a theory used to explain civil wars and why civil wars happen. And oftentimes what creates conflict in our homes are not major things, they're just little things, annoying things. There's a book called Annoying, The Science of What Bugs You by a guy named Joe Palca. You know somebody might be able to write this book if you know somebody really annoying. And he calls these little small tendencies that create conflict in our home social allergens. Cumulative annoyances are the one things that trigger major relationship conflicts. And so here we know that conflicts happen in relationships, and certainly conflicts happen in our home. But what we want to do with that reality is not just go, well, it happens. We want to say, okay, God, what do you want to redeem? What do you want to restore? And how do we get there? Well, we get there by getting a vision for the kind of home that functions in an orderly, peaceful way. And the Bible sets out a vision for peace in relationships, and certainly that would include those in the home. Romans chapter 12, verse 18, Paul's telling the Romans as they're establishing their new church, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. That's the vision. Romans chapter 14, verse 19, a little later in the letter, Paul says, let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification. So that's the vision. A home and relationships where there's order, there's peace. Things are working in the way that they were meant to work. Paul writes to the fledgling church in Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 3, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. We have to work on it. In relationships where there's conflict, we can't ignore it, but instead we must work on it to bring some peace to those places. That's the thing. Some of you are wired in a way where you tend to avoid conflict at all costs, and you think, well, this is why I've never made anybody mad. Well, this may be, in fact, a more unhealthy way than being the kind of person that enters into tough conversations so that you can work through conflict, because what the result is deeper relationships. So the vision is relationships that are strong and growing and deepening, and can be described by the idea of peace. Another passage for you as we set the stage, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14, make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. But conflict is normal. Raise your hand if you're with me. Have you known there to be conflict in relationships? Maybe some of you are sitting here this morning and there's some conflict between you and your boyfriend or girlfriend or spouse, or between you and your children. Well, I'm glad to admit that on this morning, I do not have conflict with my wife, but I would like for her to come up and read Genesis chapter 4. So would you stand to your feet as my beautiful, amazing wife comes forward and reads the passage? Truthfully, we're not having any conflict right now, are we? We're great. That's right. Tell the people what they want to hear, Jeannie. Genesis chapter 4. Are you there in the Bible? I hope so. You can look it up on your phone. If you have one of the Bibles we gave you, it's right at the beginning, one of the earliest pages. Page 3. So go to page 3. 16 verses. So here we go.
All right. Starting in verse 1. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. The Lord said to Cain, Why are you angry, and why is your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. Cain spoke to Abel, his brother. And when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, Where is Abel, your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. Cain said to the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. Then the Lord said to him, Not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden.
May God bless the reading of his word. You may be seated. Thank you, Jeannie. Little marriage advice, marry somebody that can read. Cain and Abel, the first and the eldest children of Adam and Eve, results in a murder of one by the other. It seems as if something is happening here that God wants us to see in the very beginning of time, in the first human interactions, where we see that sin results in conflict, and conflict is normal. And so what we do is we look at this passage and we learn something about conflict and how it can, and then we begin to draw application to how it can affect our families. Well, there's a few questions that are obvious here. You know, Adam and Eve, Adam says he knew Eve. That means that they procreated, they had a child, Cain and Abel. Abel was the keeper of the sheep. Cain was a worker of the ground. So you get that? Abel worked with animals. Cain was somebody who grew plants, seeds. And so they're doing their thing. Both of them bring to God an offering. Abel brings an animal, sacrifices it, offers it to God. Cain brings some sort of grain offering and offers it to God. For what reason, we'll discover and begin to hint at a little bit. God accepts Abel's sacrifice as good, but he rejects Cain's sacrifice. And there's lots of scholars who've chimed in about this. Why did he accept Cain's or Abel's and not Cain's and so forth? And some people believe it's because Abel brought an animal sacrifice. There was shed blood, and it points to Jesus, his shed blood, being an acceptable sacrifice. I don't actually think, I'm not persuaded to believe that, but that's out there, so you may think that, and that's okay. But we see something that's going on in Cain and Abel that reveals something about the human heart that can result in conflict and can result in the kind of behavior where it would lead somebody like Cain to murder his brother Abel. It's interesting because this is right at the beginning of the Bible. If you're new to the Bible, Genesis chapter 1 and 2 is a story of God's creation. Genesis chapter 3 is when Adam and Eve rebelled against God. They disobeyed God. Sin entered. God judged them. And we see right away, I mean, chapter 4, we begin to see that there's division because of sin between God and man, between people, two brothers, and we also see in the early parts of Genesis that there is, the earth is not going to function right. It's not going to work in the way that God originally intended. So sin has affected every relationship. Everything has been impacted deeply by sin. Now, if we look in the New Testament, try to understand what's going on here, why there's conflict between Cain and Abel, we read in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4, that by faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. And by faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. And so what we begin to see is that the reason that God accepted Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's sacrifice wasn't actually about the sacrifice. It was about the heart that they brought whenever they were sacrificing. And what we see about Cain's heart is that his heart is wicked. He has no desire to honor God or to give his sacrifice in faith. Instead, what he's maybe concerned about is impressing his parents or outdoing his brother. And we don't know. Totally speculation. But what happens after Cain murders his brother Abel, God comes to Cain and says, hey, where's your brother? He gives him an opportunity to admit that his heart is wicked, that he's done something evil. He's murdered his brother. And Cain says this, who am I? Am I my brother's keeper? This is an interesting thing about relationships. Because sometimes in our homes, when there's conflict, what we want to do is go, hey, I'm not responsible for it. Something may have happened, but I don't want to be responsible for it. It's not my job to keep up with somebody else. It's not my job to consider how I might be responsible for the harm done in this relationship. And Cain is ignoring his own responsibility in this conflict. And of course, God knows. God knows he murdered him. And so he says to him, hey, Cain, you're going to have a troubled life. Cain's worried, hey, somebody's going to kill me. And God says, no, I will put a mark on you. No one will kill you. But you should know, in the Old Testament, Cain is an archetype, a representative. When we read about Cain and his descendants, we think about murderous, evil, misbehavior. We think about the devil. And so we go back to this moment where there's something that we can learn about conflict in relationships with those that are in our family. First of all, just four things here. We understand that when there's conflict in our relationships, that every time conflict results from a deeper issue. And that deeper issue is sin. The part in us that's not yet made whole and right before God. The part in us that tends to rebel against God. Conflict, all conflict is a result of a deeper issue, and that is sin. And that's the heart of the issue. See, because if there's conflict, like if you were to come into my office and you were to be fighting with your spouse or to your boyfriend or girlfriend or maybe a coworker or somebody in the church, and we were just going to try to manage kind of your behavior with one another without talking about the deeper heart issue of where there might be sin, then all I would do would be to get you to choose mentally to change your behavior, but there would be no heart change. You would be still the same kind of person. So all conflict results from sin. For some of you, you've had marital conflict, and you're thinking to yourself, well, what can I do differently in the home? And what you need to do first is go, okay, what's wrong with my heart? Where in my heart is there sin? The sin of selfishness, of apathy, of jealousy, of materialism, all these things that you and I deal with. Where is that? Because I need that to be dealt with first. And for Cain, I happen to believe that his sin, the thing that got him, which resulted in murder, was anger. Didn't know how to handle his emotion. First of all, conflict resulted from sin, which is a deeper issue. Second thing I want you to see is that Cain chose the unhealthy way to deal with it, which I've already said is anger. Third thing, in the Old Testament, Cain's descendants are the archetype of Satan. Very important they catch that. And then fourthly, we see that for Cain, and certainly this is true of us, that family conflict, the patterns of family conflict that are with Cain and Abel, they affect Cain for generation after generation after generation after generation. So our family conflict patterns impact not only us, but they impact our children. So the way that Jeannie and I have conflict in our home affects the way my kids will have conflict with one another, and the way that they'll have conflict with their spouses and their children and their children's children. So it matters. So to easily dismiss or to try to ignore whatever conflict exists in our home would be negligent, because it, you say, well, it doesn't affect anybody else. Well, absolutely it does. You say, well, what do I do? Okay, there's conflict. You've made a case for it. Conflict emerges from a deeper issue, which is an issue of sin within us. You know, what do I do? What do I do? Well, what we understand the Bible to be teaching is that the only thing that's going to change your heart is the gospel. I want y'all to hear that. I've said that every week in this series. If we're talking about changing our behavior, I mean, that's a conversation that can be had, but it's very temporary. The only thing that's going to change our hearts is the gospel. What is the gospel? The gospel is good news. The gospel is that God created everything perfectly and in order. He created man and woman, and he gave them the commands to be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth with people, and to rule over creation. There was only one thing they could not do, and that was to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But they chose to disobey God. They ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So what entered into humanity is sin. All of us are affected by it. You and I, there's separation between us and God, between people and between us and the earth. But God was doing something even when he pronounced judgment on Adam and Eve because of their sin and rebellion. He was doing something to begin restoring to himself all that's been separated from him because of sin. And that something found its apex in the person and work of Jesus Christ. This is the gospel. So we are separated from God because of our sin. But God in his love sent Jesus to the cross to die for our sin. A payment had to be made. It's either going to be made by you someday when you stand before God and are judged for your sin. And he'll either look at you and see your sin and you'll be judged as unrighteous and forever spend eternity separated from God. Or he'll look at you and see that you have, through faith, had your sin forgiven, not because of your good works, but because of the good work of Jesus' death on the cross. A payment has to be paid for your sin. This is because God is a holy and just God. The gospel is that all that will turn in faith to Christ will have their sins forgiven and have a new life. That's where the heart change begins to happen. So if you've never come to a place in your life where you've received Christ through faith and said, yeah, I want to give my life to Jesus, and I believe that I've separated from God because of my sin, I want my sin forgiven, I want new life in Christ. If you've never crossed over that line of faith, then your heart is still a heart of stone, and you can try to manage your behavior, and it might work for a little while, but ultimately what will never change is your heart. But what must change for us to experience the kinds of relationships that we were designed by God to experience, what must begin to change is the deep parts of us, the parts of our heart. And the only way that will change is by the gospel working on our hearts. Do you understand that? It would be so negligent for me to stand up here and to give you practical things that you can do to make your relationships better in your home and to deal with conflict if I did not first talk about you responding to the gospel of who Jesus Christ, the good news about who Jesus Christ is. Because if you start on the practical before you get to the personal, then you are in trouble. James chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. What causes quarrels and fights among you? Is it not this, your passions that are at war within you? There's something deep within you that causes the quarrels and causes the fights. So have you responded to the good news about who Jesus is? That's the first step. If you have not, then chew on that. Think about that. You'll stand before God someday And what will you say to him about your sin? Will you say it's been paid for through your faith in Christ? Or will you say, no, I tried to be a good person? He'll say, not good enough. For those of you that have crossed over the line of faith, let me just give you some practical things that I think can help you in dealing with conflict in your family, okay? Practically, here are some things that you need to think about. You can write these down. Y'all still with me? First of all, accept the reality that some conflict is normal as a part of any deepening relationship. So, I don't fear conflict. In our church, I say this in our mission partner class, which is like for new members, like in our church, we expect that as we're walking together in community, that there'll be times where there's conflict. We don't shy away from it. We don't try to plan around it. We say, you know what? Oh, here's an opportunity for our relationships to deepen, because conflict is a normal part of deepening relationships. In a marriage, for those of you that are married, you know this to be true. When there's conflict, and there will be, you have a choice to make. Am I going to accept that some conflict is normal and this is an opportunity for our relationship to grow more deeply? Or am I going to begin being separated in my heart from that person, or begin to be guarded from that person, unwilling to enter into those hard conversations because I don't like conflict, I don't want to have any part of it? If you choose the latter route, then what you will be choosing is a very shallow, empty kind of a relationship. Now, if you're growing up, there was conflict, and it was prolonged conflict, and it was deep conflict, a really harsh conflict. Some of you grew up in those kinds of homes. Then as an adult, it will be harder for you to feel deeply connected with people. That's true. Somebody just got a score, Sports Center. There will be conflict between me and you about that, whoever was that. And we will deal with it. So accept that some conflict is normal. Don't you know that to be true? Second of all, practically what you must do is you think about your family and conflict, and certainly this applies to every kind of relationship, is you must be familiar with your own story. I can't remember if I mentioned this or not in this series, but recently I was doing some reading and I learned that there was a group of 100 very successful CEOs. And the researcher was investigating what is it about these CEOs that makes them successful. And what he found as a common denominator among these CEOs is that nearly all of them spent at least half of their time ruthlessly evaluating themselves, their own behavior, how they showed up in relationships, how they experienced relationship as children and on into adulthood. And they begin, you know, that's an interesting thing to consider. Because what it reveals very practically in our world is that you must, as you grow in leadership and grow in influence and your family grows, and if you want your sphere of influence to grow and your impact to grow, which I hope you do because God wants it to, that you must know your own story. You must know who you are. Why is it that you show up into relationships the way that you do? Why is it that you deal with conflict in the way that you do? If you grew up in a home where there was conflict all the time, you learn to show up in those relationships in a certain way. If you grew up in a home where there was never conflict, you never talked about anything difficult, then you learn to show up in relationships as a result of that. All of us have that first formation. So when I'm doing premarital counseling, this is one of the first conversations I have with the couple. I say, tell me this, how in your home growing up did your parents fight? How did they deal with you whenever you were in trouble? And every single time, they learn something about their upbringing, because the way that they learn to show up in relationship form, begin to write their story. And now they're in adulthood years, and they have been impacted by that and show up in relationships in the home similarly or as a result of that. It's not always the same way. Sometimes it's the total opposite way. For instance, if you grew up in a home where there was a lot of intense conflict, when you're an adult, oftentimes what you will do is avoid conflict at all costs. Or if you grew up in it can be either way. But you have to know your own story. So if we were sitting down and you were asking me to help you sort out some kind of conflict, what I would get at is, how have you learned to deal with conflict, and how is that impacting the way you're dealing with conflict now? Okay? And that's a hard conversation. Because some of you, like me, have grown up in homes where you've been deeply wounded by things. And it's not easy to think about that. It's not easy to think about ways in which you've been negatively impacted by your upbringing and how that affects your current adult relationships. But the reality is that you must think about it, and you must begin to know your own story so that you can learn how to change, and you can learn how to relate, and you can learn how to connect deeply with another person and connect more deeply with God. Know your own story. What's your story? This is not the environment that we would be able to share our stories with one another, but we do have an environment for that. And every week we have many people who gather in what we call loop groups, which are like small groups. And in this environment, it's another place where people begin to share their stories, get to know one another, build relationships. Just raise your hand if you're in a loop group. Just raise your hand. Give a little whoop. I'm not an Aggie fan, but I think that's, I mean, I don't dislike them. Oh, great, now we have conflict. Okay, so whatever, I just make a noise, okay? So a lot of you, if you're not in a loop group, you got to get in one. That's a great place to get to know your own story, get to know other stories, and begin to walk together in community, okay? Third of all, in relationships, I'll begin to wrap this up. Own your responsibility. So when my wife and I have conflict, what we're both discovering about one another is how we should... Don't worry, it's all good, baby. I'm not saying anything. We learn how our upbringing has affected the way we show up in our marriage, in our relationships. We don't avoid conflict. We don't want to. We want to. No. She wants to. I don't want to. You know, that's part of our upbringing, but we have those conversations, and we begin to understand, okay, this is your responsibility in this issue. This is my responsibility in this issue, and we talk about it. We try to. Not perfectly. But we try to, and that's part of being in a normal relationship where you can actually enjoy another and connect deeply. I want to love my wife. I want to be 75 years old with a bunch of kids, at least four, and a bunch of grandkids, and I want to look over at my wife and love her deeply and want to make out with her even at 75 years old. And I want my heart to burn with passion and desire for my wife. Well, how's that going to be possible? We have to learn to connect deeply now, which requires us to think about resolving, working through, and dealing with normal kinds of conflict in our home. That's the truth. You must own your responsibility. And so that's part of growing up and developing some emotional maturity, which all of us need to grow in our emotional maturity. Own your responsibility. You're responsible for part of the issue. So here's a quick illustration to give you some a little bit of a break. You remember the show The Lone Ranger? Raise your hand. So there's a scene where Lone Ranger, this will be good for me and the three of you that raised your hands. There's a scene with the Lone Ranger and Tonto. You know who Tonto is? He's this Indian warrior sidekick. They were riding through a canyon together. Can you see the picture? It's in black and white if you see the picture. There were all of a sudden, both sides of this canyon were filled with Indian warriors on horses dressed for battle. So the Lone Ranger turned to Tonto, who looks like all the rest of them, and says, "What are we going to do?" And Tonto replies, "What do you mean, me, white man?" So he's saying, "I'm not responsible for this problem. This is now your problem." And Lone Ranger's saying, "Hey, no, this is our problem. We're in this together." Tonto's saying, because I look like them. I'm siding with the bad guys. What's your responsibility? Just a few things, and then I'll draw this to a close. Your responsibility in your relationship is to first and foremost tune in to God. First and foremost, tune in to God. That's where it starts. So when there's conflict in your home, don't immediately go to battle. First thing you need to do is get on your knees and say, "God, help me to see things that I cannot see. Help me to discover my own heart, the sin that may be contributing to this conflict. Is it jealousy? Is it pride? Is it control, a desire to control everything? What is it? Is it fear? Help me, God." First thing, this is how you care for your responsibility in your home, developing relationships, dealing with conflict. First of all, go to God. And again, that requires you to turn in faith to Jesus for a relationship with God. A.W. Tozer, in his book, The Pursuit of God, has this real cool illustration. And he says this. He says, has it ever occurred to you that 100 pianos all tuned to the same fork are automatically tuned to each other? They are of one accord being tuned. They're not tuned to each other, but they're tuned to one standard where they all sound the same. And imagine if your home, when there's conflict, if all parties involved got tuned to the Father, what the result would be. You'd be tuned to one another. Rather than first going to one another to have the battle, what we must first do in conflict in our home is tune into God. And then we pursue peace. We work for peace. We engage in relationships. One thing that Andrew and I have discussed, he's a new staff member and Jason is new also, and we're building a new team. We're getting to know one another. Not only do we care about the same thing and glorifying God and making disciples, but we spend a lot of time together. And one thing that we have talked about and promised one another is that when there's conflict in our hearts in the relationship, that rather than talking about one another, we'll deal with it. We'll work on the connecting of this relationship. And although we're not in like the family in the sense that I'm talking in this series, like your spouse, we are in the church family. And so we want to pursue peace in our relationship, so if conflict comes up, that's how we must live out the gospel. Pursue peace and then also extend grace. Be someone who's passionate about there being peace in your home, which requires you to know that some conflict is normal. It requires you to know your story. It requires you to take on your responsibility, be in tune to God first and foremost, to pursue peace and to extend grace. If we do these things, I do believe we'll be on the path to experiencing the kind of family that God intends. There's so much more than I could say, but I think that's enough for now. So what I want to do is I want to pray for you and just ask God to be gracious to you as you seek peace in your home.